Chapter 25. Monastery of the Way, Habble Landing. Bridget walked carefully through the cramped passages of Habble Landing, trying to pay attention to any other sources of potential danger. But she felt as if she'd been sent to the store without anyone telling her what she was supposed to buy. What would danger look like? She supposed that if it was overt and obvious, just anyone could see it coming, but she had no idea of what an ambush might resemble before it actually began to happen. She saw no one in a great black cape, or twirling a waxed moustache, which all the villains in the theatre seemed to have, though she supposed true villains would rarely do one the courtesy of identifying themselves and declaring their intentions in a forthright manner. It was one of the things that made them villains, after all. She kept one eye on Raoul constantly. She would never admit it to the little bully aloud, but he probably had a much better idea than she of what might prove a threat. He was already even more insufferably pleased with himself than usual today, having warned them of the footpads. If she admitted it to him, he would never let her forget it. Raoul, for his part, looked and sniffed and flicked his ears this way and that, taking in all the sights and sounds of the busy, even maniacally industrious Habble. The crowded labyrinth of vendors' stalls and counters near the airship docks had been only a foretaste of the Habble proper. There were more shops in operation in one quadrant of Landing than in the entirety of Habble Morning, and they had divided their vertical space in half, so that there was a whole second level above them, presumably filled with even more enterprise. Entire lengths of cramped street were dedicated to specific crafts and businesses. There was a street of tinkers and smiths, the air hot and filled with the sound of metal on metal. There was an entire street of papermakers, the smell of their labours so appalling that Raoul buried his nose beneath Bridget's arm until they were past. There was a street of vatteries next to the street of tanners, next to the dye-makers, and absolutely everyone seemed to be in a great hurry, passing their slower-stepping group with grumbles and dire glares. The people were just as dazzling in variety. She'd always assumed that Habble Morning was the most cosmopolitan Habble of the Spire, the absolute hub of Albion culture. But though visitors weren't precisely unheard of there was simply no comparison to be made. In the space of 10 minutes, she spotted half a dozen different groups of foreigners moving through the streets of Landing. She saw a group of ruddy-cheeked Olympians in their traditional green and gold garb, most of them wearing the device of their home spire's laurel wreath upon their breasts or pendants or rings. Not 5 steps later, a pair of women with the golden brown skin marking them as Nephesians strolled by wearing long sweeping skirts in half a dozen fine pattern-slashed layers of different colours. They were followed by a tall, warrior-born man with the nearly black skin and ice-blue eyes of an Atlantean, wearing an airship captain's coat of indigo. And not long after that, she spotted a crew of rather small, lean, worn-looking men and women, whose faces were marked with the fine, swirling ritual scars of pikers. "Is this your first time out of Habble Morning, Miss Tarquin?" Benedict asked her. Bridget jerked her eyes away from the pikers rather guiltily.
"Is it so obvious?"
"Totally understandable," he said. "After all, something like 70% of the residents of Spire Albion never leave their home Habbles at all."
"I should think it would reduce one's chances of being preyed upon by footpads," she observed.
Benedict grinned. "Oh, of course. Crews like that never pick on anyone from their home Habble. Too easily identified to the authorities, and their leaders would never allow it."
"Leaders?" Bridget asked. "They aren't just, like, packs of marauding vent rats?"
"Naturally not," Benedict said. "Far too messy and chaotic, and therefore easily stopped. Everything they do has to be coordinated and carefully organized.
Organized robbery?
Among other things, yes, Benedict said. Smuggling, the sale of dangerous intoxicants, trafficking in weapons, in medicines, in flesh. His eyes darkened slightly. All controlled and precisely applied by the guilds. Bridget blinked.
The guilds? Like the Vaterists' Guild?
I doubt it's much like the Vaterists' Guild in Habel Morning, Benedict replied. All of the guilds are in competition here, and most of them engage in one kind of shady activity or another. Some are worse than others, but as a rule, if someone gets his head broken in Habel Landing, it was because one of the guilds decided it needed to be done.
It would seem to be a great deal of trouble to manage a group of men who would do such things, Bridget noted.
Indeed it is.
Wouldn't it be simpler for them to just do honest work?
Benedict showed his teeth. Probably. But there will always be those who seem to think that simply taking what they need through strength is easier and more enjoyable than working to create it. Certainly it leaves them more leisure time.
I don't understand, Bridget said. Why would guilds that behave this way be permitted to exist?
Any number of reasons, Benedict said. If there is a law, someone will work to break it. That's human nature. The guilds have a certain code of conduct to which they adhere that makes them a somewhat less appalling proposition than independent criminal activity. They are the devil we know. He pursed his lips, and they are extremely powerful.
Not more powerful than the guard, surely.
More focused than the guard, Benedict said. Much harder to find than the guard. And, of course, they aren't burdened by the restrictions of Spire law. Atop that, they also control a number of legitimate businesses, and through their influence can significantly alter Habel politics. They command a combination of fear, respect, money, and professional craft that makes conflict with them a difficult and dangerous proposition. Bridget frowned, thinking about that.
Then, pardon me if my understanding falls short, but did not Gwendolyn just issue a rather blatant public command to these powerful and dangerous men?
Yes, Benedict said placidly. Yes, she did.
Oh, dear,
Bridget said.
That seems less than ideal.
Benedict shrugged, his feline eyes constantly sweeping the streets as they walked. Perhaps they'll respect it as a show of strength. Men like that tend to refrain from unprofitable enterprises, such as preying upon victims who can fight back, and the Lancasters can certainly do that. They turned down a final cramped street, and as they did, Bridget could actually see the tension go out of Benedict's lean frame, and his face relaxed into a smile.
What just happened?
Bridget asked. This is safe territory. We're close now, Benedict said. The guilds won't operate in this portion of the Habel.
Why not?
They've been taught that it is more trouble than it's worth, Benedict said. They passed through a last bit of street crammed with buildings and suddenly emerged from the warren into the open space of a standard height Habel ceiling stretching out 50 feet overhead. The rest of the Habel's buildings simply ended, the twin levels connected by a heavy deck and several large wooden stairways, as if their designers had simply forgotten to carry the conversion of the original space beyond the point they had just passed. Before them stood a solid wall of masonry, 10 feet high, set with a single heavy gate of bronze-bound wooden beams. In front of the gate sat a man in a rather odd-looking saffron robe. The material loose fitting around the upper arms, but bound in by wraps on his forearms. His pale head was shaved, entirely bald, and he sat with his eyes closed, his legs crossed, and his palms resting lightly on his knees. A simple rod of copper-clad metal, about 3 feet long, rested on the floor beside his right hand.
Oh, Bridget said, Is that a monk of the way?
Raoul stirred in her arms and looked up at the man, the cat's ears focused forward and his tail twitching with interest.
Oh, I can't do this, Master Ferris said. Sir Benedict, would you mind?
Of course, sir, Benedict said. He raised his voice a little and said, This is Brother Vincent. He has gate duty because his handwriting is terrible. Brother Vincent smiled without opening his eyes.
Sir Benedict, have you come to teach or to learn?
Shall we find out together, brother? Benedict asked. Brother Vincent smiled and did not open his eyes. Benedict promptly unbuckled his sword belt and stripped off his gauntlet. He held them out to Bridget and asked, Do you mind? She blinked and then assured him,
Not at all.
It took a bit of juggling to hold Benedict's weapons and Raoul at the same time, but she managed. Thank you, miss, Benedict said. Then he turned and began stalking toward Brother Vincent on cat-quiet feet.
What is happening here, precisely?
Gwendolen asked Master Ferris.
Tradition, Ferris replied, watching Benedict with bright eyes.
She frowned. Meaning what, precisely?
Isn't it traditional for a Lancaster to know something about tradition?
Master Ferris asked acerbically. Folly gave a little curtsy to no one in particular, and then told her jar of crystals,
The monks take their guardianship of the temple very seriously. They won't allow anyone to enter casually. One must prove to the monks that his desire to enter is sincere.
Gwendolen lifted one delicate eyebrow. And how does one... Silent as darkness itself, Benedict sprang upon Brother Vincent.
Oh, Gwendolen said. I see.
Bridget had never seen the warrior-born move so quickly, but somehow the monk was already on his feet, and the two men met in a flurry of blows and counter-blows that made Bridget's heart skip several beats. She could barely see what they were doing, they moved so quickly, and it was laughable to think that she might be able to anticipate what might happen next. By comparison, her own knowledge of unarmed fighting was, she could see now, a pebble beside a spire. And then something terribly complex and lightning quick happened, and Benedict wound up with his face pressed against the spire stone floor, while Brother Vincent held one of the warrior-born's arms straight out and up behind him at what seemed an extremely uncomfortable angle. The monk stood over him with one foot braced against his back until Benedict grimaced and slapped the floor twice. Brother Vincent obligingly released his arm, and the younger man lay quietly for a moment before gathering himself and rising to his feet. He rolled his shoulder several times, wincing.
What was that?
It would seem, Brother Vincent said, that you have come to learn, young knight.
I was fairly sure of that 5 minutes ago. You never showed me that combination.
Didn't I? Brother Vincent asked, smiling. Goodness, such an oversight. But I'm sure I haven't forgotten to show you anything else. I'm sure you didn't forget, brother, Benedict replied, his tone wry. I think you just want me to come visit more often. Brother Vincent smiled and clasped Benedict's shoulder with one hand for a moment. It took time to soften your skull enough for ideas to slip in, but you proved a good student eventually. It is good to see you, son.
Benedict smiled and the two exchanged a bow.
Brother, we've come to the temple for help.
Vincent's dark eyes became troubled. You know that we do not involve ourselves in politics, Sir Benedict.
Nor would I ask you to do so, Benedict said. Perhaps you could spare a cup of tea and a few moments of conversation.
Brother Vincent studied Benedict's face for a moment before his gaze turned to take in the young man's companions. Bridget felt slightly uncomfortable beneath that gaze. It seemed as though the man could see a great deal more of her than he had any right to. Brother Vincent's stare lingered on Master Ferris the longest.
and he sighed. And then the rumours are true. War again.
And the walls have ears, Benedict said.
Of course. Of course,
Vincent said.
I'll get someone to cover my post. Do you bring your companions inside?
Benedict nodded and beckoned to the rest of them. Bridget walked over to him and passed his weaponry back.
That was amazing, she said.
That was typical, Benedict said, smiling. Amazing would have been if I'd beaten him.
How do you know him?
He was my mentor when I first came, several years ago, Benedict said. I was considering joining the monks at the time. Gwendolyn made a slight sniffing sound.
Ridiculous, Benny. You'd look wretched in saffron.
It's not my best colour, Benedict said gravely, nodding.
He mostly wore purple back then,
Brother Vincent said cheerfully.
Purple?
Bridget asked. Bruises, Benedict clarified, smiling. I was the kind of student who sometimes had difficulty listening.
A teacher can always find other paths, Vincent said. Ladies and gentlemen, won't you please come inside? Welcome to the Temple of the Way.